Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
In difficult times, many people turn to the arts for relief and inspiration and comfort. And 2020 has been nothing if not a showcase for difficult times. But creative people suffer like everyone else among us, and hard times can make it harder to make art. Well, this weekend, we're going to ask a couple of people in Chicago's arts community how they can keep going, or can they? Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Chicago has a vibrant arts community. The city's music venues, museums, theaters, galleries, and studios are all over. Artists are creating and singing and dancing and acting and showing their works, and of course, it all costs money. And even in the good times, finding the money for art sometimes competes with finding money for food or shelter. And these are not good times right now. But the city and the arts community go on. And in this half hour, we're going to talk about how it's going. My guests are part of a collaborative of 40 Chicagoland arts and philanthropic organizations known as Enrich Chicago. Nina Sanchez is director of Enrich Chicago. She is a daughter of Pilsen, who has been has had a passion for equity in the arts. She's also been an educator, teaching young people to become leaders. Now she's using her skills to fight racism in the arts. Vershawn Sanders Ward founded the Red Clay Dance Company in Brooklyn, New York, but it is now based in Chicago. She'll tell us more about it in a few minutes, but it's an Afro-contemporary dance company. They have their own dance academy, a youth ensemble, and provide educational programming for schools. And we are conducting this interview via Zoom conferencing, so thanks to all for joining me. Nina Sanchez, let's start with you. Tell us about the organization and the mission of Enrich Chicago.
Well, thanks for having us. Enrich Chicago was started in 2014, and it was brought together by a group of leaders in the arts and culture and philanthropic spaces as part of a broader ecosystem that, and this group really wanted to address the root cause of the inequities we see in arts and culture, both around representation of people of color in leadership roles, but also in the availability and access to resources. And so they committed to starting with their own institutions, look at the ways that we could collectively transform toward a more equitable future in arts and culture.
And talk a little bit about the representation part, because I mean, you're not just talking about racism within the arts community, you're talking about in the actual art itself.
Yes, absolutely. We think that we exist to ensure that the leadership in our arts institutions, the availability and access to our arts and culture institutions, and that the artists were being presented, that we exist to ensure that that reflects our community in this city, which as we know is roughly a third African American, a third Latino, and a third white.
How broad is the art that's encompassed by the organizations that are in Enrich Chicago? I mean, give me a sense of the kind of arts that we're talking about.
Oh, thanks for that question. We span the whole ecosystem with representation from every artistic discipline, museums, dance companies, visual arts organizations, and film and theater. So they're all in the mix within Enrich Chicago.
And is it also fighting racism within the arts community? I mean, what is the situation? And you know, you can You don't have to give me 20-second answers. We are actually going to be able to talk about this, but let's talk about that because I think that's an interesting and sometimes not often highlighted issue about the arts community itself. And it's not really one community. It's a lot of community.
Yeah. So we think that that systemic racism exists in arts and culture as well, as it does in every sector in the U.S. society, right? So it does show up both as who is in leadership. It does show up as gaps in the artists being presented. You know, whose art are we going to encounter when we're in museum spaces or in theaters or dance performances? And it also shows up as the amount of funding these organizations can get to do the vital work that they're doing. And so we want to move this conversation to more than just a conversation about what is happening between two people or potentially groups of people, to think about how our institutions reflect and carry out inequities, right? Despite our best intentions, right? We're not saying that it's intentional, but we are saying that because of the history of this country, because of race being a fault line in this country, that we see these outcomes that are negatively impacting communities of color. And we see that in the arts as well. Right, for our students, it's what kind of arts are available in their classrooms, in their school settings, right in their own neighborhoods, right? So it trickles down throughout the whole of our society, the whole of our community.
So the art is reflected somewhat, or what's reflected in the art is in some ways the representation of the people within the community itself. In other words, like you said, it's not intentional, but is it that we're not seeing enough representation in the artwork because of who populates the arts community?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, but again, we go back to the structural issues that bring us to this outcome. Right, to pursue a career in the arts means that you have to have some access to resources to make that possible. Right, you have to have some access to community and family support to make that possible as a livelihood. You have to have access to people and networks, which again is going to look different depending on your own racial and cultural background than it might for some people than for others. So there are things structurally in place that prevent there from being as prolific a life, or prevent us from seeing the art that does actually exist, right? Because we're measuring it by the same ruler when we really need a whole different set of rulers and a whole different set of glasses to look and see what art means and looks like to different communities.
Now I want to bring in our other guest, Vershawn Sanders Ward, and thank you for joining us as well. Tell us a little bit about the work of Red Clay Dance.
Hi, good afternoon. My apologies for being late.
We're glad to have you.
In rehearsal, making some dance. So Red Clay Dance Company is an Afro-contemporary dance organization. We're all female ensemble of 7 dancers, and we create work that is rooted in African diasporic movement practices. So we look at how African traditional dance has grown outside of the continent, and looking at how it evolves and looks in the U.S., but also other places where you'll find Black African descent people. So our work is rooted in that, and then we also frame our purpose, or the reason behind why we make art. We use this term artivism, so it's a connection of art and activism. So we find our voice and our way to activate change in our communities through the work that we put on the stage, and also through our education program. So we teach youth and adults all different dance forms, but I think ultimately looking at dance as a way to activate social change and community engagement.
How does that work? Give me an example of how dance can help bring about social change.
Sure. So most of the time, I would say it's about beginning a conversation about an idea or a concept. So we did a piece maybe like 3 or 4 years ago called Written on the Flesh, and it dealt specifically with this idea of looking at the lens of racism specifically in the terms of black and white and the race as a construct. We talked about white supremacy and where that raises to or comes to the surface in dance. So certain, I think kind of what Nina was saying, certain dance forms are seen at a higher level. So a ballet or more classical modern might be valued more in a certain community than a more traditional practice. And so not only how it sits in our society as a whole, but looking at it through the lens of dance and how we can begin to shift that and that funding culturally specific dance forms should be equal to Eurocentric dance forms. So that work Written on the Flesh also looked at the residue. What's the residue that we carry with us in our skin? You know, what are things that assumptions that are made about us based on our exterior appearance that are historical, right? And so how do we acknowledge that, but then begin to reframe that for ourselves? So that's an example I can give.
No, that's a very good one too, and thank you for that. But let me ask the other, the headline or the contemporary question here, and that is, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I know you just came from creating dance. How does that work during the shutdowns and the other challenges of the coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, so we actually are just getting back to rehearsal. We had to stop rehearsals in March, and we were getting ready for our spring concert, which was supposed to go up at the Hare Washington Cultural Center in April. So we've been off until last month. We had a residency at an art space in North Carolina, and that was the first time the company was actually back in space together. As you can see, I have my masks. We are learning how to dance and breathe in masks, which is very challenging. We have to take a lot more breaks during rehearsal. We're like on a break right now, and finding spaces that have good ventilation. But it's relearning. One of the dancers just said, you know, it's relearning how to breathe and understanding your body more deeply about what we need to sustain as we move through space. So it's been a relearning process. We're excited to be back, but we're also still very cautious as we, you know, move in space together with each other, giving each other enough space. And we talk, the communication has to be more clear. Like, I feel comfortable with this, I don't feel comfortable with that. You know, I'm feeling a certain way today. It may not be good for me to be in the space with everyone. So we've done Zoom calls. I'm not a fan of Zoom rehearsals because you just don't have enough room in your house and you're kicking a chair or something. So we're excited to be back in the space together, but we're still very cautious, and we're only doing 3 weeks, and then we're going to be off from Thanksgiving to the end of the year. So giving some space in between the rehearsal periods, and then testing. We've had the dancers tested. So it's a lot more steps than we're used to, but we're still trying to push through, you know, resilient, being the resilient art form that we are.
Well, and let's talk about the other kinds of steps that have to be taken, and that's the steps to keep the actual organizations going, the financial steps. Nina Sanchez, funding the arts isn't easy. How do the various companies with their different disciplines get enough money each year to do what they do? I mean, let's go over a bit of the basics first so people understand what we're talking about.
Right. Most of our artistic institutions are relying on a combination of private funding from private philanthropy and individuals, as well as revenue from ticket sales. And yes, direct revenue and support from our local government institutions and in some cases statewide agencies. And so there's a combination and mix of funds that most artistic institutions are aspiring to. And of course, as institutions that have governing boards, they rely on these folks to help them drum up some of those private contributions to sustain their work. So it's a little bit of an art, not a science, to meet some healthy balance between all of those sources. And we do know that for some of our smaller institutions, there is an outsized reliance on funding from local, municipal, or statewide agencies to sustain their work. And this is also the case for individual artists, right, who are competing for individual artist grants, residencies, and fellowship programs to sustain their own practices.
And I want to get into that in a much deeper, but let's remind people you are listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. We're talking about the arts and funding of the arts in a time of crisis. My guests are Nina Sanchez, director of Enrich Chicago, and Vershawn Sanders Ward, founder, CEO, and artistic director of the Red Clay Dance Company. So Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, which sometimes goes by the moniker DCASE, has a cultural grant program, one for individual, or programs, I should say, one for individual artists, another for various nonprofit arts organizations. It also provides space for programming and exhibitions, but it's not limitless. And for an umbrella organization like Enrich Chicago, and for a company like Red Clay, what does that mean? I mean, is it like a competition? What is the landscape for actually getting the money to do what you all do?
Well, I can definitely speak as an arts organization that has applied for and received money from DCASE. Typically, the amount of funding is based on your operating budget, so it's not an endless amount, and that within itself tends to be very political, right? Knowing that budgets of culturally specific organizations tend to be a little smaller than white-led institutions. So there's already a limit going into that process of how much you will be allotted to receive. So rather than based on actual need. And we have received grant funding from DCASE in the past. We are in the off-cycle year. So every, and I don't know the number of years off the top of my head, but every certain amount of years you have to sit out a cycle, and then you can come back in the next year. So it is it's a limited fund. I would say in Chicago, it's definitely competitive. It's one of the earlier grants that Red Clay Dance received, and we've gradually gotten a little bit more as our budget has increased. And I believe that there's a new process. The past like 2 years, I think they were giving some larger grants based on projects, and then I know that there's some specificity with art forms. So I think this year was like the year of Chicago music. I believe next year is the year of dance. So I think during that time, you may get a little bit more weight for your application.
Oh, so Nina Sanchez, looking at it from the 10,000 foot level, where you're looking at a whole panoply of organizations, what does that kind of a system do? And now, right now, we're talking about city funding, but we need to fold in what else is coming in to keep organizations alive.
Yeah, so I think that we're looking at an arts and culture sector that has been severely impacted by the global health pandemic, right? They cannot perform, they cannot open their doors, or they must do so in a much more limited way. So that significantly cuts down on that revenue, earned revenue stream for many of our institutions. I think that, I want to just note that for some of our smaller institutions, DCASE funding sometimes ends up being one of the few sources of funding that they can access, right? Again, because we're looking at oftentimes smaller organizations with a smaller team, a team, like Vershawn, of people who are wearing multiple hats and have a lot of responsibility to go through a process, which actually is not an easy process to go through to even compete for this funding. And I think that if we're, again, to look at a root cause of the issue that we're seeing right now, it's that our funding has been below level for a long time. When we compare ourselves to other major metropolitan areas of similar market size, the city of Chicago is the only city that doesn't have a designated budget line item in their budget for support of arts and culture. It is exclusively dependent on, you know, hotel tax and tourism revenue. And so what we're seeing right now is the impact of having a sector in the arts that is limited in its ability to produce and to sell tickets, and we have a tourism sector that is also severely impacted by a global health crisis, with no backup plan. And so I think that we have to look at that, because DK's funding is one of the few and transparent sources of funding that there are for the arts and culture, right? Unlike private foundations, their information is public. It is accessible to anyone who wishes to spend time looking at who is receiving the money and how much. Because they have a process that is a bit more standardized, again, it does bring equity in different ways to the arts and culture space. And we know that there have been significant efforts on their part to grow that base of funding in different ways, grow how that money and change how that money is being invested in different ways. And so we see this as a ripe opportunity to take advantage of this moment to say, what is the root cause of the problem we're seeing right now? How do we actually change a system to be more responsive to this perhaps happening sometime again in the future, right? So that our institutions, which are vital, especially our institutions run by and for people of color in our neighborhoods, don't have to close their doors, right? If even one institution has to close their doors as a result of this time, then I think that we will all suffer for it.
Let me first ask about philanthropy, which frankly is being asked to do a lot in this time. But I mean, there are philanthropic sources for funding. I know, for example, one example is the Field Foundation has a fund for media and storytelling. I would think that maybe somewhere in there might be some money for the arts. There have got to be other organizations, but could arts organizations be more aggressive about fundraising? And less dependent on government funding?
I think many of our arts organizations are pretty aggressive about fundraising. I think that, again, if we step back to look at the structural issue is, what is the access to wealth across our communities, particularly our communities of color in Chicago and beyond, right? So we have a structural issue here with access to wealth that is generational, which a lot of our private philanthropy, you know, holds. And so I have been tickled and really pleased to see the ways that philanthropy has stepped up in this moment. I've been really pleased and proud of the work the partners of Enrich Chicago have taken on this issue to change funding guidelines, to change how they even give out the money and how much money they're giving out to institutions. We've seen at the national level, the Ford Foundation take some pretty big steps, right, to freeing up funds from their endowment, much beyond what is legally required of them, to make a significant investment that is going to be more than just a stopgap for this moment. And I think that's the missing part of the equation for us here. How do we get past this idea of thinking about this as a temporary relief to think about what does long-term resilience look like? What does a long-term relationship with these institutions, and especially those that some who have sometimes never received private funding because it's a family foundation and it's highly discretionary, or you must be invited. And again, you're being asked to uphold a whole set of ways of talking about your work, reporting on your work, marketing your work that isn't accessible, that isn't authentic, that in some ways can be dehumanizing, right? To paint our communities with this brush of who it is that we are and why we exist and why we need your support.
Now, let me ask both of you the question that I think some people who are listening right now will want to ask, but might be afraid to, and that is, what do you say to people who feel the arts are wonderful, we love the arts, we need the arts, but right now we need to feed our families, right now there are people in our communities who don't have jobs, and if the government's going to be funding anything right now, it ought to be that. And Vershawn, you start, but I want both of you to talk about that.
Sure. So my first response would be, the arts is my job. The artists that are in that dance studio right now, this is their job. This is not a hobby. This is how they pay. This is how they support their families. This is how they put food on the table. This is how they pay their rent. These are jobs. The creative sector is a sector, and I employ dancers, right? And so when you say that we need jobs, like, these are jobs. And so that's my first response. And I think that has to shift the way that people view the arts as a hobby It's not a hobby. It's a professional. It's a professional career, and it's a way that you can make a living. And then I will say that the arts are essential. We did a big push right after COVID, just reminding folks that those movies you watched, you know, those dance performances you watched, the music you listen to as you're cleaning your house, those are all made by artists that deserve our support because we consume the art. So I think you should imagine a world without those things. And I think that might reframe the way you think about it again as it being essential, because it is an expression of our humanity. And without it, I think our humanity would definitely be suffering more than it is now.
Mm-hmm. Nina.
Yeah, absolutely. Last time we talked about this, Rashawn and I, you know, we talked about what is getting people through this pandemic, right? As we hunker down at home, it's this like sudden and wide access to all sorts of artistic expression, usually at no cost, right? So you are making it through this pandemic. You're feeling a little bit human and in touch with what is beautiful in the world. We can thank artists for that, right? We can also thank artists for the $30.3 billion they bring to the Illinois economy every year, right? And the 5.1 million jobs. So this isn't an either or situation. It is a both and situation, right? How do we understand that arts are actually going to be what get us through this, that are going to help us find new ways to stay healthy emotionally, psychologically, right? Spiritually, that this is not an either or, that we don't have to make a single choice, but that we can choose to invest and value arts, careers, people in the arts, and what they bring to our whole society, economically and otherwise, through greater investment in them, just as we would any other industry, provide tax credits, right? Provide changes to zoning, all of those things that we do to welcome certain kinds of businesses to the city and the state. We need to take that mindset and apply it to the work that our artists colleagues are doing.
The last thing I want to ask about in the couple of minutes that we have left is, what's the immediate future like for the artistic organizations? I mean, are there a number that will not survive this pandemic because of all the kinds of restrictions and problems that we're talking about and the lack of money?
Many have had to make some considerable sacrifice already to furlough staff, lay off staff, cancel full seasons, right? Institutions large and small. And so I think we're fearful that they won't come back again. I think we're also optimistic that if the arts can't find a way out of this problem, right, we're currently facing, if the arts can't find solutions to disrupt systemic racism, then who can, right? And so I think we have a real example in the arts to look to and to follow their lead.
Rashawn, are we going to, I mean, is Red Clay Dance Company going to make it through this? You've got a compact body of people here. Are you optimistic about the future?
Yes, I mean, I'm always optimistic. I'm an artist, and you find a way out of no way. That's how I've, you know, just really approached it. And so yes, the additional support would be greatly appreciated, but I envision Red Clay making it through. I think holding on to as much as we can of who we were before, but also reshaping who we are gonna be after. I think it will change the organization somewhat. Maybe for the better, but I think it's a part of being creative and shifting and pivoting, which we've continued to do and we will continue to do. But yes, I plan to be here. You know, we'll be making dance some kind of way, some way, somewhere, and continuing to share our work with the world. So my hope is optimistic that we are still around and continuing to fight forward.
Well, I want to thank you both. That was Rashawn Sanders Ward, the head of the Red Clay Dance Company. Also, thank you so much to Nina Sanchez, the director of Enrich Chicago, both of you for spending this time with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. There should be a link at the bottom of the page. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.